Hey, everybody. We are here today with Annalie Newitz. And then after we talked about that, I was still stuck on the funky pronouncing, almost said it wrong. got a brand new book coming out. By the time you guys see this, it'll actually be dropping tomorrow. Very, very short, but I also loved it. And I'm not just saying that. I did love that. Oh, that was a very interesting story. I like my sci-fi, but I'm not a big space opera fan or something like that. Give me a robot or a cyborg or an AI, and I'm here to at least see where it goes. Also, if you're looking for a short book, if you're looking for a palate cleanser, like 180 pages, I could have read this in one day if I wasn't working 40 hours a week as well. Super, super short, but thoroughly enjoyable. A couple of quick questions before we get into the book. One, I always love to ask every author, what is your supervillain origin story?
Definitely my supervillain origin story is that I got a PhD in American studies. And, really, that's the kind of thing that prepares you for a life of rejections as well as a life of the mind. So I started, I started doing journalism while I was in grad school. And I never thought that that would be, I thought that was kind of just a fun side gig. And that became my main gig. And I moved from journalism into doing fiction. So, yeah.
But you definitely had that writing background going.
Rejection background. Don't forget.
Yeah. There's not too many that don't have to deal with a few rejections right off the bat. One thing I always like to ask in case there's another, aspiring author or maybe somebody who's out there who hasn't quite made the bestseller list yet, doesn't have to be writing advice, but what author advice would you give to somebody who's new?
Yeah, I always tell people something that actually my mom told me when I was growing up, because I loved reading and I did write for myself for fun when I was in high school. And I was really agonizing about it. And she was an English teacher. And so I was like, oh, I'm not a real writer because, I'm not like writing all the time and I'm not doing it in a concerted way. And she was just like, you're worried that you're not writing enough. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, you're a writer. And so I always tell people that, like, if you feel anxious about being a writer, that's actually a sign that you're a writer. So call yourself a writer, like you're allowed to do it.
Perfect. All right. Got to get into the book a little bit. And another thing I loved about this book is it's one of those weird ones. A lot of books I read and I'm like, I'm so worried about spoilers. And I don't feel like there's too much I can spoil about this book. But one thing I loved at the beginning, this is answered in your afterword, but for somebody who's thinking about this book, obviously the main story is there to talk about something else. It's talking about what's not being said out loud. I kind of think of like when Marvel came up with the X-Men and the mutants because they wanted to talk about racism at a time when nobody could talk about racism. But what made you decide to have that conversation through the lens of robots working at a restaurant?
There are a lot of ways that you could read these robots. Like, the robots are obviously a metaphor for something else. And at the same time, they're also robots. They're also a way of thinking about what would happen if we managed to fulfill the dream of creating human equivalent AI and put it inside the body of kinetic creatures. What would we do with them? How would we treat them? And so I wanted to think about that question, that actual kind of science fictional question of like, what would be the realistic outcome? But also, of course, I'm living through the same thing that all of us are living through in the United States, which is that there is a rise in anti-immigration sentiment. There's also a rise in anti-LGBT sentiment throughout the country, a rise in laws limiting the rights of all these people who previously had been enjoying slightly expanding sets of rights. And so I wanted to think about kind of all that stuff and hopefully not in a messy way, but hopefully in a way that allows people to come to the book and not feel browbeaten, like they're being given like an after-school special message, but like you can read this book as an adventure about robots, and that is totally legit. But there's also a lot of stuff in there about how do we grant rights to a group of people while simultaneously dehumanizing them and taking away their rights. So a lot of the book is kind of about the hypocrisy around civil rights laws, because these robots, and again, this is not a spoiler, they're living at a time in history when in the new nation of California, there are limited civil rights for robots. So certain kinds of robots are allowed to live where they want and have jobs and make money. But even as the state grants those rights, they also say, but robots can't vote. They can't have a bank account. They can't own their own property. And so there's this kind of lie built into the civil rights that are being granted. And of course, I was thinking about Jim Crow laws, and I'm thinking about, again, the way that immigrants are now being rounded up, even though they were told that they could be in this country. And so I really wanted to have a way to think through all of those issues, but also, like I said, give people a path to kind of pull what they want from the story and not feel too much like they're having to take a radical political position. I mean, that'd be great if they want to. I would definitely approve. But I also think that it's also just a story about people.
Yeah. Another thing I liked about the story, too, is obviously you've got robots. But I think you definitely, for what's a very small group, you went out of your way, I believe, that each one of these, they're their own people. They have their own background. They're all doing, I think a lot of people might have taken this whole metaphor and gone for it's like, you know, we can't help it. This is the way we are, et cetera, and so forth. But I feel like you very much also highlighted their choices. You know, none of them are doing what they were programmed to be. You've even got one who, and this part I won't get into because I feel like it does touch on the spoilerish, but, you know, goes by a different name than he was given. Mm-hmm. If I can say he, the robots, I mean, but you know what I'm saying.
He's self-identified as he, yeah.
Okay, yep. Sorry, I made that mistake talking to Martha Wells about Murderbot one time, and I caught myself about halfway through the interview, but yeah, it's like, no.
It's hard. I mean, yeah. And I did, each of these robots has a specific pronoun, and two of them are non-binary, and then one is she, her, and one is he, him. And I was, as I was writing, I was like, okay, I got to keep it all straight, because it's very important to the robots.
Yep. But I love the fact that you gave multiple, this wasn't just a cut by the numbers. Each one of these has their own characteristic. Each one of those has a journey that they went through to get to that point. How important was that for you to make each one of these on their own journey, and they just happen to come together almost like a found family?
I mean, they are definitely a found family, especially by the end. And you know, this is to pick up what I was saying earlier about how this is a story about people as much as it is about political issues. That's the people part, right? Is I want these to be believable characters, to feel like their journeys of self-discovery aren't generic. Like, each of them has a different opinion about what's happening to them. One of them, Cayenne, who's kind of a squishy octopus robot, Cayenne is obsessed with cryptocurrency and is just doing all this like cryptocurrency speculation and just this, you know, is just gone all in on it. And that's how they're coping with the fact that robots can't have bank accounts. But the other robots are just like, dude, you're falling for all this cryptocurrency propaganda. Like, why are you doing this? And so they're dealing with, you know, feeling disenfranchised in other ways, you know? And so I wanted them to each have had different experiences during the war that shaped how they adapted to life after the war. Because of course, they've all been through this horrific war of independence that has allowed California to secede from the Union. And they're all living with this trauma. And I felt that so hard when I was writing it, because, you know, as a country, as a globe, we've all been through this trauma of COVID. We're dealing with the trauma of incredible political instability in almost every country in the world at this point. And we're just, a lot of us are just acting weird, you know, like weird things are happening. And we're starting to, I find, like, I just have this really broad tolerance now for all kinds of behaviors, because I'm like, yeah, we've all just been through some shit, you know? And like, sure, sometimes you need to go stand in the corner and like, that's okay. Like, whatever, you know? And I feel like that's where these robots are at, is that they've all been through their own specific kind of traumas, and they're all kind of coming out of their shells and learning to own their choices in a way that's, you know, really difficult and really personal for each of them.
They all handle it differently too, which I thought was perfect. Because again, without going into any details, you've got one that doesn't talk about their past, but kind of hangs on to it. You've got one that lets anything, you know, things start to go a little rough for them and kind of almost shuts down. You've got the one that's, you know, always optimistic, and, you know, it's kind of a perfect thing. I love that you brought up Kyan too, though, because one of the things, and this is the fun part of writing, how much fun did you have making up these different robots? We've got Octobots, lizard bots, we got spider bots, we've got military bots. I mean, you've got everything.
Yes, it was incredibly fun. And I am also a science journalist. And so I get a lot of access to science journals, and I read science robotics when I can, like the science journal organization has like a sub journal called Science Robotics. And so I get mail from them like every week. And I have to say, and this is like an old fashioned, like 1950s sci-fi writer thing, I would see an article about a new kind of robot and I'd be like, oh, perfect. And so one of the bots in the story, Sweetie, she's a three-legged robot with wheels. And there was a great article about how three-legged wheeled robots navigate the world and how they build, maps of the environment to figure out the best way to wheel around in it. And it got me thinking about like how weird it would be to be always on three wheels instead of 2 feet. And so, yeah, it was really, really, really delightful. I love having characters who have radically different morphologies, because everybody's bodies are really different, even when you're all human. I don't acknowledge that very often, and I just like to make sure people remember that everybody experiences their body really differently.
I also loved the subtle jealousy you snuck in there about, oh, they've always been jealous that I could stick to the ceiling.
Yeah, the chameleon robot. Yeah, because she has sticky feet. And that's actually, again, something that roboticists have been working on actually for quite a while now, is figuring out how to make those sticky feet for climbing up walls and ceilings. And it's pretty far along. Like, that's we can do that in the lab. So.
According to my mother, I've been making her climb up walls for years. So, you know, hey, it's all good.
She didn't even need the special feet. So that's good.
By the way, I also thoroughly enjoyed how much fun Sweetie had getting around when she basically had no brakes. She was really enjoying just zooming around town.
Well, I live in San Francisco, right? Which is the town of fixies. So there was definitely a period in my life when I was having to get out of the way of a lot of people coming down hills on fixies. So
Can't imagine. Yeah, I have been kicked off the trolley in San Francisco.
Oh, were you making a fuss?
No, we'll make this fast because this is a personal story. I got on the trolley because there was no place to sit next to my wife. We're going up and down, and they'd said, you know, no moving when the car is moving, which is fine. So when the car stopped, the person next to my wife got off, and I just switched seats. And they kicked me off for that because I did not stay in the seat I started with. I didn't even know that was a rule.
I didn't know that was a rule either. I mean, I used to
at least it was his rule.
Yeah, because I rode the cable cars when I was a kid before they were just for tourists, like back when they were actually for transit. And people would just hang off the edge. You'd be like hanging on the outside. I'm like 7 years old, like, woo, like, go ahead, rip my arm off other cars. No problem.
But getting around San Francisco, that is a workout in and of its own.
It is.
That place is crazy. All right. Again, 176 pages on this book. Very, very short. I do have to say, this is one of the few ones I got to the end, and a lot of times I'm like, a book kind of wants me leaving a little more, and it did. And then I stopped and I thought, I was like, but what would I add? you told the story that needed to be told without any fluff. So I really don't think, I mean, at best I could see maybe a prequel for those, but I've never seen a prequel do well. So I think this was a perfect book in its size. And I think we've kind of already talked about the metaphor without giving too much away. Mm. Is there anything you would want to tell somebody about the book that we haven't already discussed?
I mean, a lot of this book is about food, and how much I love food. It's about robots who learn to make noodles, and they make my favorite kind of noodle, which is Biang Biang noodles, which are a hand-pulled noodle that come from kind of northwestern China. And so they're a wheat-based noodle. They're not rice-based. And they are delightful to watch people make, but they're really wide and chewy. And for me, my noodle aesthetic is as big as it can possibly be. Like, if you can give me a really wide, big noodle, like, for whatever reason, that makes my mouth happy. And so when I discovered Biang Biang noodles, I was just like, okay, this is the ultimate kind of noodle. And I really wanted to imagine what it would be like to be able to share those kinds of noodles with everyone. And so in a sense, of course, this is a book about robots. Of course, it's about, you know, a lot of social issues, but it really is also just my effort to like advocate on behalf of more Biang Biang noodle restaurants in America, like, or just Xi'an Foods. Xi'an is a city that's one of the biggest cities in the area where Biang Biang noodles are pretty common. And so like Xi'an Famous Foods in New York has Biang Biang noodles. And so like, there's kind of, I mean, I was saying earlier that like, there's no like message in this book. Like, I don't want people to feel like there's like an incoming message, but there is a message, which is, please, can we have more Biang Biang noodles? So, yeah.
Are we going to get a recipe in the special edition?
I mean, I actually have not learned to make them, but I am happy to recommend restaurants. So, yeah, that's... it'll be more like recommendations for restaurants, which there are a few in the acknowledgments. I talk about some of the places that I've had really good noodles. So, yeah.
I do have to say, I've seen a couple of books now that have recipes as part of this swag that came with it. So,
yeah, I think that's a really cool idea. And I mean, honestly, you know, there's so many great recipes out there already for Biang Biang noodles that I feel like, and especially watching people make them on YouTube, that's like how I did research for the book, was like just watching them. And of course, one of the characters, Hans, who's the robot, who's an arm robot who learns to make the noodles, that's how they learn to make them, is by watching old YouTube videos on what remains of the Internet Archive after the war. And that's like my fondest dream, is that like the Internet Archive will survive and it will be full of like instructional videos for rebuilding civilization, because noodles are like one of the cornerstones of civilization.
I mean, why else is YouTube around except for to talk about books and cooking, right?
Pretty much. I mean, and cats, you know, like, and or other non-human animals. I'll take it wherever.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. So again, like I said, 176 page book. I can't tell people much more other than the fact that pick it up. You will enjoy it. So moving on a little bit, what are you reading right now, if anything?
I'm actually reading a bunch of stuff right now. I've just started research for my next nonfiction book, which is a book about archaeology, which I write about quite a bit in my nonfiction life. And so I've been researching the Bronze Age, and I've been reading Muthi Al-Rashid's new book, which is a history of Mesopotamia. It's called Between Two Rivers, and it is incredible. It's super approachable. It's like all about life, you know, about 4,500 years ago, and just sort of the everyday experiences of people. And I've really been enjoying that quite a bit. And I'm also in between bouts of that, I've been finally finishing up C.L. Polk's Kingston trilogy. And the third book in that trilogy is really different from the first two, and it's been really fascinating. It's all about basically about election meddling. And so it's been really great to get to read that finally. And I'm a huge fan of C.L. Polk, so I kind of was saving this book as like a treat. And so now I'm having my freaking treat. So
exactly. No, I get that. You kind of already answered my other question. My next question was going to be, what are you working on next? But I think we've already covered that.
Yeah. Well, I will say that the book is about, it's an ancient history of partying. So it's going to be, if you're interested in how people partied and celebrated in the ancient world, that's what it's about. But also I have an anthology coming out in December that people might be interested in. I co-edited it with Malka Older and Karen Lord, two incredible science fiction fantasy writers, and it's called We Will Rise Again. It's an anthology of essays and speculative fiction about political resistance and protest. And we've been working on it for about 2.5 years. We had no idea how relevant it would be, but it's finally coming out in December. So yes. If you're looking for a holiday present for the person in your life who really needs some hope about the future and about resistance, like, this is it.
Perfect. Yeah, I know a lot of book people that don't like nonfiction books, but I think you just haven't found the right author yet, because I've read some really good nonfiction books that read like novels. So if you can find the right one of those, perfect. There's nothing wrong with learning something while you read, people. That's all I'm saying. If it's really good, you learn something without realizing you're learning something. Those are the best ones.
I think so too. And I mean, obviously, as a writer, I mean, I have to learn things from nonfiction in order to fill my books with plausible ideas. So for me, reading about history, reading about science and technology in the nonfiction realm, like, helps me make shit up, you know, like, and it also, it's good to remind yourself what the difference is between fiction and nonfiction, especially in our times. Those are all in capital letters, in our times. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's easy to forget that there is an art to presenting information that's evidence-based, that is as truthful as possible, and that you can do it in a way that's engaging. That's just as magical as telling a story that helps us escape from reality.
And I think especially your genre, the science fiction and nonfiction are probably the two I think go hand in hand the best. The number of things that have been created that was in somebody's, you know, science fiction mind first, and the number of things that somebody's working on that sparks an idea for the science fiction writer, I think that happens way more than any other two genres that you try to jam together.
I think that might have been true at one point, but one of the things I've noticed, especially in the last, like, I don't know, 10, 20 years, is that a lot of fantasy authors are writing really compelling stuff about science and, you know, like, inventing like biologically plausible creatures, for example. Mm. Or, like, I can't tell you how many environmental scientists tell me the thing that inspired them was Lord of the Rings, like, or The Hobbit, like, reading about these societies that are living kind of in harmony with nature, that are fighting against forces that are trying to destroy nature. Like, that really is an inspiration. So it really depends on the science, I think. Like, I think fantasy can be a really great way of exploring questions around biology and environmental science in a way that traditional science fiction doesn't always do. And I think horror is the same way now. I think there's a lot of horror about science and pharmaceuticals and, like, corporate science and, like, something like the movie Megan. What is that? Horror? Science fiction?
I feel like
the first one, not the second one.
No, I was just going to say, I think that a lot of the times too, a lot of the genre blending is a little more accepted than it used to be. I think it's a lot of stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot of horror with a little science in it, or horror with a little fantasy in it, and romanticism has become its own thing. It's just all in. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I was so impressed.
Like,
yeah.
We mix exactly. Everything these days.
Yeah. But I think that, I'm always really impressed with the depth of scientific appreciation that I find in fantasy now. And I never used to see it there. Maybe I've changed too, but I think it's very real. So yeah.
I feel like some of those things too, where probably a lot of times there's a lot of authors that have wanted to mix a little bit, but, you know, once upon a time, you had to go through one of the big publishers, and the publishers didn't like to mess around with things that were working.
Mm.
I think the indie publishing community has opened up a lot of streams, and people are like, that went off. And that's kind of like what I want to write. And, you know, they see that it can be done, which helps.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Anything you want to talk about that we haven't talked about? Doesn't have to be book related.
That was good. I got to plug Noodles. I mean, I feel like any day when I can, you know, propagandize on behalf of Noodles is like, you know, a complete day.
Perfect. Well, I have to say too, at first I was like, oh, that's kind of a weird title. I get it, stuff like that. But then reading the book and seeing how it got to the, because let's face it, the name of the book, as most things, every movie you see, just about every book you read, that title is in there somewhere. And the story of how we got to it by the end, I loved it. And I also love the cover too. I'm just going to show that again real quick.
Yeah.
Just for giggles. If you read the book, you're going to know exactly what this is in the book. I don't know if that little guy was in the description, but yeah, perfect. So
yeah. Love and that. Also, I worked with a website designer, Mike Montero, to create a website that is in imitation of the website that the robots create in the book. So if you want to buy swag from Automatic Noodle, which they wind up doing in the book as they're selling swag to support their local indie restaurant, just go to automaticnoodle.website and you will find a delightful hand-rolled HTML robot-created website, which was, of course, actually created by a human. And we worked with an artist, Lucy Bellwood, who created a logo that the robots kind of make in the book. And then, well, they commissioned it in the book, just like I commissioned it in reality from an artist. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. And people, you know, we've gotten a few orders. Like, people actually have ordered Automatic Noodle shirts, which is kind of amazing to me. So I kind of set it up just as a joke. And it was like, nope, people apparently want the t-shirts. So, okay.
I'm glad you said that, because when I first found out about this book coming out, which has been a few months now, I actually remember that being part of the marketing thing, is that you could go to the website, and I had completely forgotten about it by the time that I actually got to read the book. So yeah, I got to check that out again. I know I checked it out, but I checked it out months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It's now fully up and running. And yeah, there's even like an old fashioned blog on the site, which I'm going to keep adding to, so you can have the experience of old school internet.
Perfect. All right. Okay. So one last thing, I got to make sure I ask this of every author.
Of course.
I don't hate Amazon. They send me really good like DVDs and stuff. But I love my brick and mortar bookstores. So shout out to a brick and mortar bookstore that you prefer or near you or however you want to handle it.
Yeah. So, well, I have to shout out Noe Valley Books, which is mentioned in Automatic Noodle because it's the bookstore that is in the neighborhood where Automatic Noodle takes place. And it is my local bookstore. They're wonderful. They're worker owned. They used to be called Folio Books, and then they went out of business, sadly. And then some of the folks who'd been working there were like, wait, but we want to keep this going. And so they launched a crowdfunding campaign. They got the bookstore back on its feet. They remodeled it. It's beautiful. And they're going to be hosting the book launch here in San Francisco. So I love them. I mean, I love many bookstores. There's incredible bookstores all over San Francisco. So, you know, shout out to Green Apple, to Fabulosa, to Booksmith, Dog-Eared Books, lots of other places. But Noe Valley Books, of course, is like special to this book in particular. So
perfect. I'll make sure that there are links to all those bookstores underneath once this goes live. Is another side question based off of that, is, how do you say it was, Noe Valley?
Noe Valley Books, yeah.
Noe Valley. Is that the place that somebody might want to go if they're looking for possibly a signed copy?
Yes. So you can get, if you go to automaticnoodle.website, by the way, there's links to get signed copies. You can get them from either Green Apple or from Noe Valley Books. I'm happy to sign them however you want. You can put in little requests.
Within reason, people.
Yeah, within reason. Do not ask me to write a sequel in the little opening pages of the book. Please do, or, you know, order books from your local independent bookstores. I mean, this whole book is about independent entrepreneurial ventures, like small businesses and how important they are to the community, places where you can physically go and get to know the people that work there and get to know your neighbors who buy books there. And so, yeah, please do that. And if you don't have a local independent bookstore, you can always go to bookshop.org and they'll order from your closest indie bookstore. And so you're still supporting an independent business that's just trying to get by and like be a friendly neighbor. So, yeah.
Yeah, bookshop.org, I always plug. And if you like audiobooks, Libro.fm.
100%.
Both of those give a piece of the pie to your local store.
And your local library. Heck, you know, please check this book out of your library, you know, and say hi to your librarian and tell them that you love them, because libraries are dealing with a lot right now. So every friendly word helps.
We went a lot when my kids were younger, but I'm of that age now where if I really want a book, I usually just, you know,
yeah.
I want it on my trophy shelf.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, but it's good if you're like experimenting, you know, like say you're like, well, I want to try some nonfiction. I don't normally like nonfiction. You can just go to your local library, chat with your librarian, tell them what you're interested in. They know stuff. They like know what to recommend. It's like, they're literally librarians.
They have a half a chance of figuring out what that book you saw with a blue cover and the mm-hmm. green tree at the front.
Yeah, they've got like a plus 10 on all rolls for like investigation of bookshelves. So
I used to work at a bookstore and I would love the people that would come in. It's like, do you have that book that was on Good Morning America this morning? I've been at work all day. I didn't watch. And they have not updated the website yet. Trust me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like props to Good Morning America for promoting books. But yeah, it's always good to, if you like a book, write down the name if you can.
An author, what it's about, maybe.
Sounded good. I mean, you know, that's step one to getting people addicted to books again, is just like they remember that it sounded good. So like just keep encouraging them, you know.
All right. So I think we're going to be wrapping up for time on this one. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to come hang out with me.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. Yeah.
Like I said, this will drop. We'll drop it the night before your book comes out. So if people are interested, got to have the cat.
Yep. She was ripping my box of books apart. So I had to pick her up. This is Ultraviolet, Destroyer of Books.
With, not to be confused with Fluffy, Destroyer of Worlds. Got it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Anna Lee. Much success on the book, I'm hoping. And like I said, as short as it was, I absolutely loved it.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, you can finish this off in a day, more than likely. Two at the most. That's what it took me. So.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Bye now.